Welcome back to Athens Happens. I'm Aidan McDougall, digital content producer for The New Political.
And I'm Megan Taylor, digital content creator for The New Political.
Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics.
You can find new episodes at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded.
The 2023 general election in Ohio was headlined by issues 1 and 2, both of which passed. The issues will protect the right to an abortion under the state constitution and legalize the possession and sale of marijuana, respectively. Overall, the state saw issue 1 pass with 56% of voters voting in support, and issue 2 pass with a total of 57% of voters voting in support.
While Athens County specifically saw an overall voter turnout rate of 47% for this November's general election, in comparison, Athens County had a 37% voter turnout for this past August's special election and a 49% turnout for the general election in November 2022.
Today, we are here with Ohio University alum Larry Heyman, the driving force behind legal education at Ohio University. Before returning to Ohio University to be an educator and an advisor, Larry excelled in civil litigation, specializing in election law, education law, and domestic relations. His extensive legal background includes trying cases at the administrative and trial court level, along with successful appellate presentations. Hi, Larry.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, I guess we can start just general first question. How does the passage of Issue 1 impact the existing abortion laws in Ohio? And what legal challenges do you think may arise?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. And of course, abortion's been on everybody's mind since the Dobbs decision back in 2022. But I think something that's overlooked quite frequently is that issue one was about more than abortion, right? It protected reproductive rights, I think, generally. It protected the right to an abortion in certain circumstances, the right to contraception, and the right to fertility treatments. So, you know, if we're thinking about issue one, I think we need to start in 1973, right? 50 years ago, when the United States Supreme Court in a case that, of course, everyone knows, Roe versus Wade, limited the ability of state and federal legislatures to regulate abortion in certain circumstances, especially abortions that were prior to viability, right? The ability of a fetus to be able to live outside of its mother on its own. Since 1973, legal and political movements have been working to overturn Roe versus Wade, and especially break up that trimester framework that Roe put into place in 1973. They came really close in 1992 in a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey. That case established a new standard called the undue burden standard. And that was the constitutional standard that really governed from 1992 until 2022 when the Dobbs decision came out. In the interim, many states, including Ohio, moved to regulate pre-viability abortions, and many of their attempts were, of course, stopped by United States Supreme Court precedent saying, you know, you can't do this. In that interim, Ohio passed the heartbeat bill, which criminalized most abortions after a fetal heartbeat was detected. And this legislation has been on hold pursuant to a court order. But essentially what issue one does in terms of abortion is return the decision back to the pre-Dobbs Roe framework.
All right. Well, kind of flipping topics on the ballot, regarding issue two, legalizing recreational marijuana use, what are the key legal considerations and regulatory challenges for Ohio here?
Yeah, so it's really interesting, right? Because issue one was a constitutional amendment. And of course, we know from government civics class and political science class that constitutions generally at the state and federal level are the supreme law of the land. So the Ohio Constitution is the ultimate arbiter of what's constitutional under Ohio law. And, you know, the same thing's, of course, true for the United States Constitution. But the proponents of issue two put it forward as what's called an initiative statute, and that is, it's just a law, right? It's a law just like if the, you know, the legislature passed a law and the governor signed the law. It's a statute. It's a citizen-initiated statute that goes into effect 30 days after the passage, and after its passage was, what was the election date? November 7th, I think so. I think maybe December 7th. I don't do math, so that's why I went to law school. But so just like any law, the legislature has the ability to tweak it, to repeal it, to make changes to it. And so I don't think that you'll be I wouldn't be surprised, based on some of the things that I've seen in the news, that the legislature, the government, is looking at making some changes to that, to the law that was passed by the citizens earlier this month. You know, some things that people need to be thinking about are, it's still illegal to be impaired on marijuana and drive your car, right? It doesn't legalize that. Employers still have the ability to drug test employees. You know, it doesn't provide any protection for employees to be able to use marijuana freely. You know, there are certain amounts of marijuana that certainly would still be criminalized under the law. And there was one more point that I wanted to make. It'll come back to me. Does that prompt any more questions from you all?
Yeah. I don't know how to say it. I didn't know that it wasn't the same constitutional thing. So, like, does it have the capacity to be voted into the Constitution? Or, like, could they have done it that way?
They could have done it that way. I don't know what their rationale was in deciding that they didn't want to try for a constitutional amendment. But, you know, for some reason they decided that initiated statute was the way that they wanted to go. And again, just like any statute, it can be repealed or tweaked or changes made to it by the legislature.
Just the closest state I can, like, think of that I'm pretty sure has the same law, but is Michigan's, if you know, in the Constitution, or is it also statute?
I don't know the answer to that question. Yeah. Okay. Oh, the other point that I wanted to make is that marijuana still remains criminal under federal law. Though I think we've seen a decision by the federal government that they don't appear willing or wanting to put resources behind arresting marijuana offenders.
Do you think, like, now that, well, I guess in 30 days when this goes into effect, do you think anyone who had like past possession charges, they would get expunged, or do you think they're just going to?
This law actually doesn't affect that. This law doesn't affect that. Now, of course, generally speaking, folks have a right to petition a court in certain circumstances for a sealing of the record, but it's by no means automatic. That would have to be done by either separate constitutional amendment or initiated statute. Now, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting why they chose not to include that in the provision that they put forward. Maybe that they thought that was a bridge too far. Maybe they thought, let's start here and see, you know, where we land. But no, they didn't decide to do that here.
How might the results of these ballot issues affect the balance of power and legislative priorities in Ohio's government?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that it's going to affect the balance of power, right? I mean, it's going to be the same governor and the same general assembly. But I think what it does demonstrate it is that direct democracy certainly still has a place here in the state of Ohio and in our country and in our, you know, our separation of powers, right? You know, the legislature has a certain function, the governor has a certain function, the judiciary has a certain function. And here in Ohio, we've said the people have a certain function, right? That doesn't have the same corollary at the federal level. So here in Ohio, we have the ability to say, you know, if we're not in agreement with something, we have the ability to put it up for a vote and to try to make a change.
What are your thoughts on the 27 out of 67 Ohio House Republicans that signed a statement against issue one and said that we will do everything in our power to prevent our laws from being removed based upon perception of intent. We are elected to protect the most vulnerable in our state.
I prefer not to answer that specifically. Okay. What I would say is, generally speaking, again, we've got a system of government that each branch of government has its own role, and the people have a role in government in Ohio, and that's through direct initiated statute, which we saw with issue two. We saw that with direct amendment power to the state constitution. And, you know, ultimately speaking, it's up to the judiciary to say what issue one means. There's been some questions about, is there a viable challenge to issue one as being unconstitutional? Well, this Supreme Court actually looked at the language and actually said that it was okay to put on the ballot after making some minor tweaks to the summary that the Secretary of State put forward. So I don't have an opinion to express on that statement, but I would say generally separation of powers and checks and balances that have been the bedrock of the American experience for, you know, 200 plus years, I think are applicable here.
While talking about like the balance of power and where we're at, so the heartbeat bill was shut down by the Supreme Court, like the state of Ohio at the time. Held up in the court?
It was held up by a lower court decision. Yeah. It's actually interesting, after Obamacare was passed by the federal government in 2010, some people saw that as an intrusion on the power of the people and the power of the states. And the people of Ohio passed an amendment that essentially said that Ohioans have a right to essentially their own health care. Right. So that's the provision that has been utilized to help uphold the right to reproductive freedom in Ohio. And that's been at the lower court level. Our Supreme Court hasn't weighed in on that particular controversy yet. So it's actually interesting that what some had seen as an anti-Obamacare constitutional amendment ultimately resulted in a stay of the heartbeat bill as a result of the right to people being able to make their own healthcare decisions. No one saw that one coming.
No, first time I'm hearing about it. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know about all of that.
In the context and sphere of Ohio being seen as a battleground state, how could these outcomes of the ballot issues reflect maybe broader trends in public opinion or national priorities? I mean, even after we've seen the New York Times, everybody saying Ohio did something kind of out there for Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I think what it reflects is that political views are much more nuanced than left versus right and red versus blue. Ohio is a state that, you know, went Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump, right? And we have a fairly progressive senator in Sherrod Brown and a U.S. senator, and we've got a fairly conservative senator in Senator Vance. Ohio's constitution, you know, contains these protections for healthcare freedom and minimum wage and now reproductive freedom. So I think if it reflects anything, it's that the views of Ohioans are very nuanced and I don't think can easily be viewed and boiled down to, you know, are we a red state or are we a blue state? Are we a purple state? Are we a libertarian state? Right. I think, if anything, it's reflective that the situation's much more nuanced and complicated than what, national and even maybe some regional folks make us out to be.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about the August issues, we were kind of talking about how abortion and marijuana seem to not be so harsh on party lines, kind of like what you were saying, like we saw Ohio do this, or was it Kansas last year that also did something like this? So I would agree there. Can't really be cut and dry like that for some things.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really have like a question to add. The only thing that I had was just like, from what I've heard recently is just like Ohio is a good, maybe like middle point representation of like the United States, just because of like diverse ideas and just an amalgamation of people from all over the place just coming all to Ohio.
Yeah, our slogan is and was in the 90s and is again the heart of it all, right? Sort of this crosswoods of America that's represented, represents a lot of different people in a lot of different areas, right? I mean, Cleveland's very different than, where we are in Appalachia. That's very different than Columbus. That's very different than Cincinnati.
So were there any notable legal issues or controversies in the campaigns for issue 1 and possibly issue 2? And how might they influence future election-related legislation?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting question. Of course, there were notable legal issues or controversies relating to both of these ballot issues, especially, Megan, you referenced the precursor to November's issue 1 was August issue 1, right? Which was a special election to determine, all right, how many people does it take to make the choice of whether or not we are going to amend our Ohio Constitution, right? I mean, as we sit here today, it's 50% and a feather, right? Just, one more vote than half. There was a proposal, in August in a special election to change that requirement in both terms of percentage, right? So I think the threshold that they were proposing was 60%, but then also requiring a certain number of signatures from every single county in Ohio, which, again, we were just talking about Ohio is a really diverse county, a diverse state with 88 different counties. It would make it significantly more difficult to amend the Constitution under issue 1's proposal. The argument was that, much like the United States Constitution, it should be hard to amend the Constitution of the state. The counter argument was, of course, no, this is a check on, the government and the ability of the citizens to engage in direct democracy. And, by a vote that pretty much aligned with what ended up happening in November, the citizens of Ohio voted to keep the Constitution in the way that it's been for, 100 years. That occurred, right? The August election occurred, and then there was certainly a flurry of litigation between the proponents of issue 1 and the Secretary of State's office, and that landed at the Supreme Court at least once, maybe twice. Certainly there was lots of litigation, challenges to both issue 1s, right? The first issue 1, August, we'll call that one August issue 1, and then November issue 1. So yeah, flurry of activity in the last 6 months in Ohio election and election law, right?
Yeah. I know we don't have a question about it, but again, I'm just sparking here. Mm-hmm. What does I know you said that some people are trying to get this thrown out or however it would be, but what is the actual process of if they were trying to ixnay issue 1?
Well, so the process to be able to do that would be another constitutional amendment, right? So the proponents of to overturn issue 1, what will be a provision of the Ohio Constitution, though I don't know that we have a formal designation, in terms of what amendment it will be. I don't know that off the top of my head, but their remedy would be to do the same thing, to gather enough signatures to put it for a ballot vote, to either repeal issue 1 that was just passed, or perhaps to make limitations or tweaks to the language that was passed. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So they'd have to do the exact same thing. That's for issue 1. For issue 2, the legislature could get together tomorrow and say, no, we're going to repeal that legislation, and the governor, of course, could sign that repeal. That's a much different process and a much harder process to do.
Yeah, I think the litigation and what they were trying to do in August, like, this is just me, but what they were trying to do in August, and we already had a podcast about this, is, like, minimize Ohio's power, kind of like we've been talking with the checks and balances. Like, this is our check on the government, and when they're overstepping, this is kind of us being like, hey, this is where we all fall. So I think it showed a lot winning in August, and then the results of this election. Like, Ohioans, we know what we want. We want to be heard, and we want to be represented. And it's kind of cool that it's in the Constitution now, and that differentiation means that to repeal it, it would have to come back to us still.
Yeah. And, you know, some states don't have this ability. Some states don't have the ability to put citizen-initiated amendments into their constitution or directed citizens-initiated statutes, you know, into their law books. And it's a pretty awesome power that the citizens of Ohio have. And they've, you know, pretty clearly spoken that they like it and they want to keep it the way it is, at least for now.
I know it's a crazy what if, but if issue one passed with, like, over 60% instead of the 56 that it had, do you think there'd still be people trying to repeal it in a way, even though?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I expected it, but just due to everything that was set up for August issue one and that special election of, oh, you need, like, that 60% to put it in, even if it still hit that.
Yeah, I don't think that would make a difference. And, well, you know, to be clear, the other issue one could come back too. You know, they could try to, when people are maybe less motivated or less interested in politics or the issues, there could be a proponent of a constitutional amendment to raise the threshold. Again, you know, so again, you know, none of these are always fluid situations, right? I mean, I guess that's one of the pros, I guess, and cons of, you know, our Constitution, you know, being so relatively easy to amend, certainly as it relates to the U.S. Constitution, right, which is super hard to amend. But, you know, it does give the ability of, you know, proponents and opponents of current constitutional protections the right to be able to say, you know what, no, we don't agree with this. We're going to try to make a change in the law.
What does the passage of both issues one and two mean for Ohioans directly? Obviously, we know it'll take 30 days for issue two to come into effect, but, like, changes that we might see or things that might change for Ohioans directly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this question sort of encapsulates the things that we've been talking about, right? We're going to be returning to a pre-Dobbs world when it comes to reproductive rights. We're seeing enshrined in our Constitution for the first time, you know, fertility treatment protection and contraceptive protection, right, which is, you know, essentially been the law protected by the federal government, right, since, you know, going all the way back to Griswold versus Connecticut, right, probably cases that you've all studied in your political science or other courses, but protected under, you know, the Ohio Constitution most immediately. For issue two, I think it's less clear as to what's going to happen because, as we've said, the government does have the ability to make changes, tweaks, and even repeal issue two. I think I saw that the governor came out with a statement a week or so ago that essentially said that, you know, the government, you know, should represent the will of the voters of Ohio, but that he thought that some tweaks were necessary. So, you know, specifically, I don't know what's going to happen with issue two. Stay tuned. But I think more broadly, it again sort of goes back to this conversation that Ohioans are a very nuanced people and represent a lot of diverse views. It means that they respect the separation of powers that our state government has set up, that those checks and balances are still valid, and that perhaps generally they're opposed to government making decisions, right? I mean, we see that with the healthcare amendment in the Ohio Constitution. We're seeing that, you know, in the reproductive health space, you know, marijuana, though not in the Constitution, right, was really about a person being able to make that decision and not necessarily the government. And, you know, that Ohioans will stand up when they think that the government is following a path that they disagree with, right? I think we saw that with both August issue one and November issue one, and that they'll probably continue to do so.
Yeah, I think both elections just show that, like we talked about earlier, but even we may have Mike DeWine, a Republican, as a governor, but like Ohio itself doesn't fall, in my opinion, nearly as far right as maybe DeWine sets us out to be. And I think that's becoming more clear in the past or in the elections, and especially this past November election.
I mean, I don't know when, even if I can yet, but like see party wise or like where people like affiliate themselves voted, like that breakdown. I don't know if I can see that yet, but I still wonder if there was like any independents or like any like Republicans that voted for issue one, just under the idea that this is a choice. And with that, well, I mean, both one and two are choices, yeah. But just the fact that this is a choice and I'm not shutting anyone out for just making that choice just because I don't agree with it.
Sure. I mean, I think you probably, you know, I haven't seen the breakdowns either, but you know, both of these issue one and issue two were supported by bipartisan and nonpartisan, right? People that don't identify with any party, that's clear just because of the numbers of the percentage of the turnout, you know, and certainly these are issues that, you know, small C conservatives, are interested in, right? You know, they're really interested in, you know, government intrusion, right? This is my, this is the you know, government, you've gone too far. And then of course, you've got people on the left who, feel that way, but probably for different reasons. Especially related to marijuana and when it comes to issues of, you know, criminal records and mass incarceration and when it comes to issue one, certainly, you know, that all of that comes into play.
Well, Larry, we want to thank you for being here and everything that you even taught us just sitting here, which is fantastic. And if we ever have anything like this come up again and you'd like to be on, we'd gladly have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. I know, I'm sorry we had a couple of scheduling snafus, but I know everyone at this table is very busy.
Yeah, thanks again. And that's a wrap for this episode of Athens Happens.
If you're interested in joining the New Political, come see us in the Radio Television Communications Building on Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m. Also, make sure to check out thenewpolitical.com for more podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time.
Bye.